Yes.
Thank you.
So I had not been back in since the last time that we were here, and I'd gone on vacation, so I did come twice in 1 week, I think last week or the week before. And it was kind of, I met with the lawyer and I met with Ms. Palafox, and we kind of did a walkthrough inspection, and I liked a lot of things on, like the lawyer had said, management-wise. I think practice management-wise, with the people that are in the office, they're now helping him, whether they are permanent or temporary. He is listening to them, which is wonderful, because ultimately that is my goal, is to make things better. So they are listening to me, and we're kind of all working together, so that's nice to see. A lot of the cleaning stuff that's been done, reorganizing, protocols, love all that stuff. That's really great to see, because that was kind of, all of that stuff is what I was trying to put into place. So from a management perspective and paperwork-wise, I showed him a few things that I was still seeing that were incorrect. We had some long discussions that first day that I kind of referenced in my report. And then I came back in on Friday to take a couple charts and just do a report. So that was much better in the filling things out and the follow-up and signing things. There wasn't a lot of variations in cases that I looked at with charts, but overall, him being told to use the papers, that's wonderful. So from the practice management look at it, the protocols that they're writing are wonderful. Those are great. I kind of want to reference back to the July thing, though, that wasn't really discussed, is that there was things that I saw that I explained that were not on paper anywhere. And that is what I kind of feel like is being missed, like medicine-wise or lack of. And it's more than just compliance on a statute of doing a physical exam within 6 hours. So to me, this is complicated, because it's my most recent report is just charts, clutter, logs, and things like that. With him having other people in the office, I am not there all the time to see what is going on. And if I hadn't have seen those things with my own eyes, I wouldn't have been able to report on them, because none of those things were written down. So I don't know, and I feel like I can't speak on that type of thing, on if there's any improvement or not. Paperwork-wise, protocols being written, there hasn't been any training on it yet. They had stated that they wanted to wait until I looked at it. So what's being created in the idea is great, but I feel like it's where I was in May, or whatever. The idea, the creating documents, nothing has been implemented, yeah, if that makes sense.
That is, yes, Madam Chair, that is a definite cause for concern, because the point of, as you well know, of your practice monitoring is to be a consultant, as you are, to the responsible veterinarian, to get them in compliance with the veterinary practice.
Not a consultant, yeah, so definitely very different positions. So practice monitor is a different from a
practice,
veterinary
practice. I said
practice,
monitor, did I not?
You said consultant.
Pardon?
Consultant. You said consultant, which would be something different.
Oh, right, but a practice, yeah.
But I did.
She is advising how to correct things.
Yes, and I did meet with him originally, and there is like a contract with his lawyer about that, because the bottom line is, and I had told him, I could go in every 2 months, make my reports, look at stuff, do the inspection, and that's that. Or that's when I had started coming in regularly as somewhat of a consultant. So I know that the practice monitor and the consulting thing is kind of separate, but there's a little bit of a gray area. So on the bottom line, yes, I went in after the 2 months and made copies and looked at stuff and answered questions and found what was still an issue from that aspect. But on the consultant side of it, now that I have not been in the office, They didn't do surgery on one of the days I was there. The other day I was in the office doing other things and they did a surgery. So the standard of care side of things I have not observed and had not reported on in this one. But the controlled drug logs are still a disaster.
Yes, that was evident in your report.
Yes.
And that causes me great concern. Controlled substances is a very important area in this day of epidemics of addiction. So to not have, after all this time, to still have not, when you've provided the log formats, et cetera, that they're still not being correctly used is of concern. And here maybe DEA could be of assistance in training, providing education, doing an audit, just from the DEA perspective, so that we either get things in line or DEA will take action at possibly at their level. I'm very concerned that things are continuing after all this time and all these efforts to be logged incorrectly when it comes to controlled substances. I do want to note and appreciate the improvements in clutter and cleanliness. That's great. But controlled substances is one area of, remains an area of major concern. And again, I will turn to the veterinarians on the board to ask their opinions about the not using analgesia that contains opioids.
Well, actually, could I actually say something about that? It's kind of funny, right? We have two sides of the coin here. Number one, their controlled substance situation is terrifying.
Yes.
But then let's add opioids to that. Ooh. But yeah, to offer the kind of medicine that they're providing.
Yes.
Analgesia is kind of important. I mean, that med's progressed to making sure that, you know, there's pain management and it's humane care, right? So like kind of seems like there might be a little bit of a crossroads here. Do you keep offering this type of surgery without pain management or adequate pain management? And can you offer the adequate pain management if you can't take care of your controlled substances in a safe manner? Because again, yes, we have this opioid epidemic and you're putting people at risk, you know, especially in that situation. So yeah, from the doctor's standpoint, it is a good question, right? Like, even as a layperson, you know that's not good standard of care. I mean, you wouldn't go to a surgeon that was like, here you go, here's a Tylenol, right? But at the same time, like, where do you, as a veterinarian and standard of care and all that, and then going into the controlled substance issue and opioid epidemic and stuff,
how as a board
do you get there? And maybe that's something that we wait until we hear from, you know, the respondent. But
well, we don't have any statutes that directly address pain management.
However, we have standard of care, so it falls under standard of care, right?
So the question would be, in a situation, surgical situation like this, could effective pain management be accomplished without using opioids? So I think that's the question.
Yes,
I think it's hard.
Blocks, I mean.
It gets hard. You've got blocks, you've got orals, NSAIDs, but it's hard in a surgical setting. So I don't understand why we wouldn't be using at least NSAIDs on these surgical cases.
Well, there's Ketafin injections.
Yeah.
And Loxacam.
Yeah, which is the generic one, Loxacam. But it's still only a 24-hour dose.
I'm sorry, Dr. Wright.
Oh, sorry, but that's still only a 24-hour dose of meloxicam.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were some injection meloxicam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it.
Peri-surgically.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but otherwise it's Ketval, and then I think ISO was it.
And ketamine has pain.
But it's not long.
No, it's very short-lived.
It's very short.
Yeah.
Very, very. And then cardiac issues, you have problems. You know, if you have cardiac issues, you can't really use that.
Renal. It would be tough. To answer your question, very, very difficult to provide proper pain management without opioids, which brings in the question that Ms. Frost brought up. We have now opened another can of worms with the controlled substances issue.
You can't keep track of euthisol.
Pardon?
If you can't keep track of euthisol,
well,
I worry about keeping track of methadone or hydromorphone.
than when we do about the surgeries that are done on animals that need stronger analgesia. Do we limit those? And that's, I'm posing that question to the board members.
Maybe you pose that to the...
Without question, there's a huge problem with controlled substances. And I really think we need to bring DEA in at this point and report it to DEA.
I feel like we need to figure out the controlled substance issue before we go into the, whether or not he would eventually ever be able to manage having opioids in his practice. You know what I mean?
I do, but then do we limit the practice to certain surgeries?
Well, I think it'd be interesting to hear from him how he thinks he's going to do that. How he thinks
how can that be accomplished?
He does this without having opioids. Let's see what he says, because I don't...
Okay.
I mean, maybe he's got a magic wand.
Do we have other questions for Katie? Katie?
No.
Or
no.
Is there one more thing I can say?
Yes, please.
The other kind of perspective on that is, without those drugs and with the induction methods that are being used, yes, and the monitoring and the anesthesia monitoring in itself is subpar, and everything is super high on the ISO and things are not recovering well, and I try to explain the concept of neuroleptic analgesia and how that works and how all of that could be changed with different trainings and protocols. So it's not just pain per se, it's even the whole animal's experience with being boxed down or then being cranked up to 5 for an extended period of time, or that one that was left in the room by itself for 15 minutes on 3 ISO when I found it. And there's so much involved with this,
yes,
it's very hard to kind of pinpoint those things. So from my perspective, it's not quite just pain management, that's one side, but then there's your induction and anesthetic monitoring, as well as like the overall care of the animal. So that's all I wanted to say.
Which gets me back to, do we need to limit until the controlled substance issue was...
Yeah,
before we have that discussion, we'll have to,
yeah,
hear from... Before we have that discussion, we'll have to hear from Dr. Sensabay.
Sure.
Yeah.
So done with me?
Thank you.
All right. Mr. Carey,
Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Santanez. This is, and he is present to address a few items. The issue of the ISO 4 or 5 is certainly on our radar. He is exploring some additional options, including, let me give you the official name. I know it is nalbuphine. It's an option. It's a non-opioid, but it is a... It was initially used in sport horses, but it's used for dogs and cats as well. And what it can do is it can allow you to increase sedation without increasing the sedation level. So you can essentially do pain management without further having to increase pain management. It is indicated for both pre-op, intraoperative, both major and minor surgery, and post-op analgesia. So it is one that is being considered as a potential addition to the pain management. So that is one way in which we're looking at that. I think there has been a little bit, I think because of some of the feedback that he's received from Ms. Carpenter about the controlled substance management, I think he's a little gun shy about introducing additional controls. With that said, I think there's sort of a chicken and the egg situation. I think in parallel tracks, the controls need to be reviewed, making sure that they are fully compliant. And at the same time, I think we need to be on a parallel track dealing with making sure that the anesthesia is meeting the standard of care. I appreciate the concern about the ISO, but I also agree that there's not a statute that specifically dictates what someone can and can't do to induce anesthesia for an animal. It's basically just about the standard of care. And as the practice monitor indicated, she did not really go into, for the purposes of a report, standard of care. So I think that this is a function of, it's a noted issue. It is an issue that he's been working on. I mean, it's how I have the recommendation for the nalbuphine as a potential addition to the anesthetic process. So I think that there is an opportunity there. And I think that the, you know, time has been put in to, you know, with Katie, with Victoria, and then with the compliance individual to understand and ensure that they are properly logging things. And I think that that is a, you know, a continuing, very high priority item for us.
We have a question for Flynn.
Yeah.
That new drug you mentioned, which I'm totally unfamiliar with, how is that administered?
I believe it is IV, correct? Yeah, it's an IV.
So that once the pet is released back to the owner, it cannot be used?
I don't know that you would be using nalbuphine in that way. I think it's just post-operative analgesia. So after the animal is taken out of anesthetic, at that point it would be used to manage their immediate post-operative pain. You would then send them home with probably an oral preparation at that point.
Of something.
Yeah, okay. You wouldn't be using syringes or anything.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Excuse me, can I talk a little bit? Permission to talk?
Yes, please.
Yes, right. We did a random survey and about 30 people after different type of surgery, and no one said the animal went home in pain. No one. So I mean, you believe the client or you believe the what is the report? Okay. But you know, it's true. And I'll keep surveying my clients, and I see it's really true. What is the animal in deep pain and the animal crying and or throwing up or whatever. But no, most of my animals, they go home in no pain. We put in all the meloxicam, and with that plus ibuprofen, and the animal, they do good. I mean, I don't see any type of alcohol, like abusing or animal make it suffer after my surgery. I don't see that.
Well, in all fairness, the studies that have been done about pain for pets, most humans can't assess that very well. That's why there's a very specific, like through, you know, different associations, like pain scoring that veterinarians are able to do, because it's not something that the regular person can see. And even from the time I started in the professions 27 years ago, there was old school thought, don't give them pain management. But that has evolved in 27 years. And so standard of care has evolved too, just to clarify that. It, surveying the general public, they're not gonna have the 24 points, you know, of assessing pain.
Well, it's very common for a client to bring in an animal and say, my animal's limping, and you say, well, we need to do a pain medication. Well, we're not in pain, we're just limping. Yeah. Yeah, that is pain. So it's very hard for people to perceive pain, actually to the point where, up until about the late 90s, we didn't think animals felt pain the same way people did, which is now insane to even think that we thought that. So just because we're not seeing the animals respond, they don't feel sorry for themselves. They just had a piece of tissue cut off of them. That's painful, yeah. But what are they gonna do about it? So they just accept it and move on with life. That doesn't mean they're not in pain. So they are in pain. If you're doing surgery, they're in pain.
Yes.
Flat out.
Yes.
So
and hence the reason for the high ISO gas anesthetic to keep them on the table or to get some, you know, acceptable vitals is yeah. You're trying to counteract the amount of pain that they're in by putting them on too high of a gas anesthetic.
And I don't want to speak out of turn because I am, as you know, not a veterinarian, but my understanding of their ISO use is the 4 and the 5. ISO 4 and 5 is being used very judiciously for a very short period of time, and then they're backing off of it. So it's not being used for
because,
extended
right, periods. But they get in too deep of a plane of anesthetic. So what happens is then they're almost dead, and then you have to let them wake up again, and then you put them back up, and you get them almost to a point of just being deceased, and then you back them up again. So it's, you wouldn't leave them there because they will pass away, but what you're doing is you're trying to artificially get your vitals to a point where you think they're fine, and then you back them off. So it's not, that's not actually good medicine, that's bad.
I keep in 1.5, the isoflurane, kind of stable in that level. And I mean, just, you know, seldom we put in a higher depth in 4 or 5, but for a short time, you know?
Yes, probably when you're cutting or when you're removing things that are really painful, yes.
Move the orders, yes, and then pretty sure the animal feels better.
Because it's pain.
Immediately to the high enough to go back to 1.5, which is the
opposite. Yeah, but if we had proper pain control on, you wouldn't have to chase them with that, because what you're doing is seeing a response from the animal due to the pain that they're feeling while under anesthesia. Just like we hear from people, they woke up during anesthesia, they had a paralytic, they know what's going on, they feel it. That's a horrible situation. the animals are feeling the pain, so they're responding physiologically, so we're chasing them with the anesthetic. They start going under anesthesia because the anesthetic's very high. Now they're too deep, we have to bring them back off. Now they're starting to wake up again, they start feeling pain. Whereas if we actually treat the pain properly with injectable pain medications and dealing with it with opioids at the induction or at the time of surgery or pre-medication, you're not gonna be chasing them because they're not feeling that as much, or actually they're just not responding to it based on opioids. But the fact that you're having to chase them with anesthesia is telling us that the anesthetic is not working properly.
Using anesthesia as a method
analgesia.
Of pain.
Yeah.
Anesthesia is different than analgesia.
Yeah.
That's why it's different words. But we need to modify that pain protocol, and then you'll see differences in how anesthetic works.
And I think just the fact that they are both exploring and considering other analgesics, anesthetics, I mean, that I think to me indicates they're this is not something where they want to go toe-to-toe with the board and say, we are going to continue to do X type of medication on these animals. This is a developing process. And I think this is, the best I can tell you is this is consistent with what I see, whether I'm doing this here at a surgical center in compliance. We fix, generally what we're doing is we're fixing all the procedures and protocols. We can bring the standard of care along with that now that we have sufficient protocols. And even this morning, I was given some additional protocols for strays, for triage protocols. Things are being put into a protocol manual. The controls, I do think, are going to fall in line. I think, you know, my suggestion is Katie come in sooner than the two-month mark. I know she has 2 months to prepare her reports. We get Katie in a little sooner once they've had a chance to internalize her most recent report, and I do think we can cure that. I think that can be remedied. And then at that point, if the board still remains unhappy, you certainly have the option of bringing in the nuclear option of the DEA, which unfortunately doesn't really serve an audit purpose so much as an enforcement purpose. So it doesn't really come in and cure so much as it's sort of a blunt instrument. And so our thought would be we now have much more clarification, especially given the last week with Katie coming in twice. I think that can also be remedied to the point where the board will have a level of comfort on both tracks, which is the standard of care with the pain management, opioids, whatever it ends up being, and the documentation.
My question around that, I appreciate that we're trying to come to a solution, we're exploring different options. In the meantime, the animals that are going under surgery, what do we deal with them? Or is it just they're just cannon fodder until we figure it out?
Yeah.
Or what's the recourse for the animals that are going to be going under anesthesia until we have proper But until it comes in and starts being used,
right,
are you not doing surgeries until then?
Right.
Or are you still doing surgeries?
For example, lidocaine, intraperitoneal for the female and intratesticular for the male, and they control the pain too. So plus the other medicine. So therefore, the animal will be protected. No one will be crying. The deep, you know, the surgery, like I used to do bone surgery, I don't do anymore because of my hand.
Mm-hmm.
I have problem with surgery in my hand. But you know, other intestinal foreign bodies, you know, which I may be in pain too. I mean, I'm not to do that type of surgery until I get the nalbuphine.
But any surgery is going to cause pain. So until you get that and actually have a proper protocol, do you think it's right to still do surgery on these animals and just say, oh, well, the next ones will be taken care of? Or do we stop doing surgery until you get that protocol implemented so that it's fair to all the animals and none are being unneedlessly put through a painful procedure with no pain recourse?
I can stop the surgery. You want me to? I can stop the surgery. You know what I mean?
Until we can treat the animals properly,
yeah,
I think that would be the best thing.
Right.
That would be the most fair thing to our charges.
Yes.
Because you don't want to put an animal through a torturing surgery for no reason when you can easily give them pain medication. So I would highly recommend not to do surgery until you get a protocol in place.
Right.
Surgery is painful.
I would agree with that, but I'm starting to get a lot of unease about the amount that's having to be explained and told
mm-hmm.
on surgery just to get us to a base level standard of care.
Yep.
That's surgery. What about all the other things that are being seen at this clinic that we're not here to tell somebody how to practice and how to get their standards up? Neither is a practice monitor. Like, you as a veterinarian have to understand medicine and have to be able to put practice protocols in place that meet the standard. And we're talking about one specific area of surgery, but I'm not confident that this isn't spreading beyond just surgical patients.
Well, we have our option for that testing modality. Not ICBA,
yes.
It's...
Evaluation, yeah.
Yeah, so we always have that potential option.
I'm not seeing the lidocaine documented, at least on these two surgeries that we have the paperwork on, that we're doing, lidocaine at all.
It might be worth considering, that's not the reg, but our ICBA, sorry, what is that?
It's the species-specific ICBA exam.
Oh, it is ICBA, okay. So we always have that option to measure competency that way. We've done it before.
I would feel differently if this was a practitioner who's doing limited service out of practice. There's other veterinarians there that are taking over when a case gets outside of their practice scope, right? But this is a general practitioner who owns his own clinic, who's been doing successful for years, and we don't want to see that go out on a bad note,
right?
But at the same time, at some point, if your knowledge isn't keeping up with current standards and you're not able to do that and you're a solo practitioner, we've got a problem.
Yes.
And it's not the doctor sitting in front of us that it happens to everybody.
Yes.
This is something that this happens to everybody, and at some point we have to say we either are going to limit our scope and do only what we know we can do and do safely and do well, or we gotta retire. Like, we gotta figure out what that is, and that's where I feel like we are, because I feel like we shouldn't be here telling him how to practice medicine. That is not what we're for. I don't feel.
I agree.
That you don't have pain medicine is not something we should be having to say. Like, that's not okay. The fact that we're having to explain pain in animals is...
We have to feel comfortable that he is understanding what you're saying.
Yes.
Very well said. And that's where we're all struggling.
Yes.
Is there a gap between...
Well, can we work?
We can stand up here and we can put it all, we can lay it all out. But unless there's an understanding that this is what has to happen, like you said, we have a problem.
Can we order to take that test at this point? Or do we have to...
Is it only 50 questions, 100 questions?
It's not much, but it's a...
I mean, is it worth saying right now, we feel all surgeries should be stopped until you have a protocol?
But in addition to that, we want
you to really look at your scope of practice and come back and say, what do you think you're going to be able to do well? And we're going to limit your scope of practice to these items. And you're going to tell us how you're meeting those standards. Like, I feel like the onus is on the doctor and his staff to be able to say, this is what we feel our clinic can do and do successfully. And they have to kind of prove it to us. Otherwise, I would say, no, I don't feel comfortable that anything going on there is okay.
Very well said. So with that, I would make a motion to amend the consent agreement to limit the scope of practice temporarily, on a temporary basis, eliminating surgeries.
Until we have a proper
Until appropriate policies and procedures are in place and the board has seen them.
For pain management protocol.
Would it be good though to ask for a review of what practice offerings may be appropriate given the current availability for standard of care and scientific knowledge?
Sure.
Is it okay to add that?
Yeah, I'll amend my motion to include what Nikki said. Yeah.
So I have a motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to amend the consent agreement.
I think procedurally, Mark, would they have to offer us a consent agreement to amend? Okay.
Yeah, that's what she said. Make a motion.
Do you want to give less than 30 days?
Pardon?
Do you want to give less than your normal 30
days? Yes. I think at this point, 15 should be sufficient. We've been dealing with this for quite a while.
So 15 days is the offer to make an amendment to the consent agreement?
Yeah, and if not signed within 15 days.
Then it comes back to the board at your October board meeting.
Yes.
Okay.
Does this also include the extension for the 1 year probation? Are we combining those?
No.
That's a good point, Tracy. I'm going to address that once this motion is done.
Okay.
So there's a motion and a second. So we'll do a roll call. Dr. James?
Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. James is an aye. Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, so that passes, yes. And then...
And then I think we need to revisit the IR case, because now it kind of makes that motion at least suspended, because we have an interim practice restriction. Unless you want to continue, keep that in place and simultaneously extend the probation for 2 years,
yes.
Then there's nothing that you
yes.
need to do.
Yes, I that would be my preference, excuse me. That would be my preference based on the fact that, as I mentioned before, one of the concerns is some of the corrections have gotten undone over time.
Okay.
So that,
is that the consensus of the yeah. board to keep that motion in place? So Tracy, what will happen is the new consent agreement that will be offered will have the two changes, extending probation for 2 years plus the term of the practice restriction.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I
think
we need to, because we got things. Okay, all right, well thank you. So we'll just do a really quick break to get to the bathroom and then get started with our first informal. Or I'll talk to Victoria about rerouting. Yes.
Members of the board, before everybody leaves,
yes, sorry.
I got called by my office to attend a special meeting at 1:15. Gene Galpin from my office is going to come and pitch hit.
Okay.
The meeting is right across the street at the Capitol. As soon as that's over, I'll be back.
Okay.
But
just don't get over there.
You're just
we'll miss
the
you.
Man.